Coaches, welcome back to the podcast. I'm excited to welcome Andrew McPeak to the podcast today. Andrew is the VP of Content for Growing Leaders, and he's the co-author, along with Dr. Tim Elmore, of Generation Z Unfiltered, and he's the author of his new book, Ready for Real Life, Unpacking the 5 Essential Soft Skills Great Leaders Instill in Their Students. Today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing Andrew's new book and diving deep into how we as coaches can effectively lead this generation of athletes. As always, if you enjoy the episode and want to grab a copy of the free podcast notes, you can go to cuttingedgecoach.com/podcast, or you can click the link in the show details to download a detailed free PDF of notes from this episode or any episode of the podcast. And you can also go to cuttingedgecoach.com or check out the links in the show details to learn more about other free resources that we offer coaches, as well as our one-on-one mentorship program. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Luke. I appreciate you inviting me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Me as well. I love what you guys at Growing Leaders are doing for coaches, for schools and leaders, equipping them to be better leaders for the emerging generation. I know for the coaches that listen to this podcast, it's something that they care about. We want to be great leaders for the athletes that we have. And I think, like we were talking about before we hit record, it can be really hard and frustrating trying to lead this generation. Yeah. And I would love it if you could just start off and give us what you call a clear picture of Gen Z. Picture is an acronym. Will you give us this clear picture of Gen Z? What are we dealing with? What are we encountering with this generation?
Yeah. So this is what we do at Growing Leaders. We kind of try and live in the gap between the really smart PhDs who are doing a lot of research and the practitioners who are every day on the field or in the locker room with these athletes. And so this acronym picture is my attempt to do that, is to kind of say, here's all that research that was out there and what we know about Generation Z, the young people we're leading today, born between 2001 and 2015. And so this acronym hopefully will give you a clear picture of Generation Z. So the letters in picture, P-I-C-T-U-R-E, each represent a characteristic of Generation Z. And it's in particular, it's a characteristic that is different from the millennials. So there's probably a lot of coaches out there who are like, man, these millennials are tough. And I'm like, no, your millennial is your assistant coach. That's your colleague. They're in their 20s, late 20s and into their 30s and even young 40s. Today, Generation Z are the young people that we're leading, and they're a little bit different. So let me walk through this really quick. The letter P stands for private. And when I say that, what I mean is, whereas millennials might have been very public with what they posted on social media or what they were willing to share with friends. My favorite example of this is when millennials went to a party in high school, they took 39 pictures, with their digital camera, and they went on Facebook and they posted all 39 photos, right? That was, you created a folder for that party or whatever. For Generation Z, they take those same 39 photos, but they pick the very best one, maybe one or two, and then they run them through several filters, doctor them just right, and they post only what they want you to see. And I think that's a really clear idea of what we're talking about here. Generation Z is very private. They like to control the spaces that they're in and keep everybody at an arm's distance. I've heard in focus groups, kids as young as middle school saying, there's not a single adult or young person my peer who knows everything that's going on with me, because of my ability to compartmentalize my life through technology. The letter I stands for irreverent. Irreverent. I probably don't have to give you many examples of how today's generation is basically, they're disruptors. They're kind of blowing up every traditional institution, every traditional definition. And for them, the goal is to land on honesty and truth. I think they're growing up in a world with a whole lot of fake news, and they're looking for things that are real. And so trust has become the most important currency we could possibly have. And so for today's generation, for them, they're going to blow up anything. They're going to deconstruct anything that they feel like is not getting them towards the honest answers that they're looking for. The letter C is creative. you know, when millennials first got access to technology, the primary thing we did with it was consume, right? We were consumers. We enjoyed entertainment. We watched YouTube videos, all of that stuff. And Gen Z certainly consumes, but they're a lot more creative in those same spaces. So they're going to create their own YouTube channel. They're going to hop on TikTok and create a video of themselves doing the latest trendy dance or whatever it is. And so that creative element is very much a part of who they are. I think that's also driven by their desire to create something themselves that makes them successful. So the number one desired job that a kid has today is to become a YouTube influencer. That's the number one desired job of young people today. And so that creative element is really tied in with their desire to be successful, to be a celebrity or be well known at some point. The letter T stands for taxed. And that's speaking to the anxiety, depression, and really the biggest characteristic people are talking about today, studying today, is loneliness, the loneliness that they're experiencing as well. And all of these go back to a generation of kids who are growing up in the most isolated state we have seen on record. So today's generation is the great paradox of the world they're growing up in. They are the most connected generation in history. And they are also simultaneously the loneliest generation in history. And all of that stress is causing a lot of problems that they're experiencing right now. The letter U stands for unleashed. The way I think about this is we have unleashed them into the world in a way like never before. It might be more accurate to say we've unleashed the world onto them. But basically, this is the first generation that's growing up where at a very early ages, they were given unfettered access to the world and its information via their devices. And that feeling of being unrestricted and sort of unleashed is a new phenomenon. Even when I was growing up, I went to high school in the early 2000s. We had the internet, but you still had to get a hall pass and go down to the library and have the librarian help you log in, you know, and search through Encyclopedia Britannica. Today, there's no safeguards. There's no adult gatekeeper. They are fully unleashed into the world, and it's sort of unrestricted. They can just kind of explore at will. The letter R stands for restless, and I mean this quite literally. This generation is getting less sleep than previous generations studied. And at the same time, we're finding that the less sleep you get, the more it causes other issues. And I know when we talk about the anxiety and depression and all those topics, it's really easy to point at that and go, well, phones are the cause. They are certainly a major cause. But one of the sort of tangential causes is the more I'm on my device, the less I'm sleeping, and the less I'm sleeping, the more stressed and anxious I feel. So there's some direct connections that we're often not talking about. One of the best things we could do for Generation Z is help them build better sleep habits. It can literally be transformational for a lot of them. And then the last letter E, I know that your coaches have heard of this, and that is entitled. But I think all of us, not just the next generation, are growing up in a world where we get stuff just for showing up, right? Even 100 years ago, we would not have felt entitled to indoor air conditioning or plumbing or even electricity once you get far enough back. And so for us growing up in the 21st century, for today's kids growing up in the later 21st century so far, we have to realize that they are used to just getting stuff for showing up. And so there's just a degree of I have higher expectations on my coaches and leaders and even on my own parents than previous generations might have. So those are the ones I lean on as these are what we're seeing in the data is private, irreverent, creative, taxed, unleashed, restless, and entitled. Just a few characteristics for you.
That's really good. And I think that resonates with me in a lot of ways. And I'm sure with the other coaches, there were just two thoughts that popped into my head as you were sharing that. The first is, you know, talking about unleashed and, you know, I have young kids, 4 and 1.5 years old. And my wife and I, we're already talking about how we're going to approach technology with them and how we're doing it now, right? Before they have their devices. And I'm hopeful that there is a shift in parenting because now it's like, you know, I'm on the younger end of the millennials, but I think millennials are recognizing, okay, we got to be more careful with how we let young people engage with technology.
Yeah.
And this is connected. The second thought was around sleep. I mean, I can't tell you how many of my students or players sometimes will walk into my class and I'll just say, did you sleep last night? And they'll either say no, or they'll say, yeah. I said, what time did you go to bed? 3 a.m., 4 a.m., yep. 2 yep. a.m. I said, what were you doing? I was on my phone.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Wow. And so I think for coaches, there's an important piece here of one of the things that you should probably talk about in your parent meeting is that you need parents' help. And one of the primary ways parents can help you is by helping their children build good sleep habits at home. And so if you're a coach, share some of the research around sleep with the parents in your program and say, this is one of the primary ways you can help us be successful is these things, right? Yep. Don't allow your child to have their phone in their bedroom, right? Don't let them charge it there, right? Make sure they're like, help your child learn to control their phone, not let their phone control them. Because like you said, just the access to tech and what it's doing to their sleep and the impact of sleep on everything. It's like, I'm telling my players all the time, like, you guys don't drink enough water and you don't sleep enough, man. Like if you want to be a better basketball player, start doing those two things more. You'll be amazed what happens. And you know, they're 13, 14, 15, and their metabolism is crazy. And so they don't really understand it yet, but I'm like, guys, you have to be sleeping more.
Yeah.
And so I just think that that's a really specific practical thing where, hey, as coaches, let's enroll parents here in the space of, hey, this is one of the ways you can be a huge help to our program and your child's performance is around sleep. Kind of a tangent, but yeah, that popped in my mind of, it's such a big, big thing for this generation.
I 100% agree. And like you said, these are really practical topics. I know when we talk about generations, we like to make it really big and sort of, you know, here's the data nationwide. But really what we have to focus on is what are the small wins we can implement that will actually make big gains. And you're exactly right. Better habits around technology, better sleep habits. These are basic, simple things that we've just sort of lost discipline around. And that lack of discipline is having effects that we don't even realize. You know, many people have talked, and I actually put it in my new book, talking about the HALT method. You are at your poorest decision-making self when you have one of four things going on: hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And I just wonder how many of the poor decisions that our student athletes make come back to, I was really exhausted. My brain was not at full functioning. It already wasn't at full functioning because I'm 13 years old, but it wasn't at full functioning. And that led to me to make that poor choice. And all of a sudden you can actually trace a lot back from just better habits, taking care of myself. And right now that is not being modeled well for them by adults, and their devices are specifically designed to keep them from making those positive choices. So,
that's good. And again, so important there that adults, we've got to model it, and we got to be disciplined with those if we're going to help our young people do it. You call your new book Ready for Real Life. Tell us about the inspiration for that title.
Yeah, for me, you know, I went through a couple of titles, but I landed on that one because I think it's punchy and it's poignant, right? But the crisis, I think the challenge that leaders of the next generation are facing right now is they're doing a whole lot of work, they're doing a whole lot of development, they're doing a whole lot of coaching, and yet somehow our students are exiting our leadership and they're not ready for the next stage. And I've met so many coaches, so many parents, so many leaders who are just wondering why, right? They got super great grades in school. They're star athletes on the field, whatever it is, you know, some of the big box checks that we're looking for. But for some reason, when they got to that next level, whether it was college or career or the next level of their athletic journey or whatever it was, they were unready for that moment when they got there. And when you explore, there's a ton of research happening right now in the area of soft skills. And that's really what my book is all about, is showing that you can have a student who is very well developed in their hard skills, super high IQ. They're very, very talented in a number of areas, whether that's athletic or charisma or whatever it is. But if they are underdeveloped in soft skills, it is actually going to tank them later in life. We've got this saying at Growing Leaders that success in school is about 75% IQ and about 25% EQ, right? You've heard that term before. EQ is emotional intelligence. So school requires about 75% IQ, 25% EQ. Success in life is just the opposite. It's 75% EQ and 25% IQ. And so my argument is, if students are actually going to be ready for the world they're entering into, and frankly, more successful now, I think we have to recognize that the soft skills, the social and emotional intelligence, is just as important to develop as all of the hard skills, you know, the X's and O's and all of the things that we're working on day in and day out. And there have been a number of amazing coaches and leaders who have started to realize this. If you talk to some of the highest level coaches in the country, I'm a big fan of Brett Ledbetter and what he's doing with What Drives Winning. And you see across the board, what these people are talking about is the thing that separates successful teams and successful programs who really develop their student athletes is they have a focus beyond just the hard skills of their specific sport, and they're actually developing and creating a cohesion among their team members, better soft skills, emotional intelligence, social awareness, self-awareness, some of those kind of components. And I see that as a key component of success on the court and off the court. I just think it's a huge focus. So that was where I ended up on that title, Ready for Real Life, is if we're really going to have them be ready for the world they're entering into, and really even ready for the game that we're playing on Saturday night, it has to come down not just to the hard skills we're developing, but also to the soft skills.
I love it. And you know, the thought that was just triggered in my mind as you were sharing that, I can't remember who it was, but I was having a conversation with someone maybe a month or two ago just about coaching, and we were talking about all the different aspects of coaching that are required if you really want to be great at it and if you really want to develop the whole person, right? And I think we were talking about, at this point in the conversation, we were talking about, you know, practice and just on-court stuff, X's and O's, right? Those hard skills. And we're just talking about the time that you invest into that. And at some point in the conversation, you said, and even when you invest all that time into it, it's still not enough if that's the only thing you're doing, right? Yep. And coaches, we often feel just like pressed for time. I do not have enough time to get the things done that I need to with my athletes. But it resonated with me when you shared that phrase that you guys at Growing Leaders often say, the 75% IQ, 25% EQ, but really it's flipped. And just the reality that, yeah, in sport, that emotional, that social emotional piece of it in sport is so, so important, but it often is so, so neglected. And you are right. There are some amazing coaches and leaders that I've recognized it, and not just now, but there are some even in the past that they were ahead of their time and they recognized the importance of it and what it does in not only building your team, but then obviously setting these athletes up for success in life. Like you said, we want them to be ready for real life. Like if I coach these junior high boys for 2-3 years and I don't put them in a position to be more successful in high school and in life down the road, well, even if we won some games, at least my definition of success, I don't think that I was that successful if I didn't help them become ready for real life. And some of it, they're not even going to realize that it was things that were helping them get ready for real life. But I think one day they'll realize it. Like, for example, I make a habit of having one-on-one meetings with my players. And for some of them, like, they've never had this kind of a meeting with a boss or authority figure. Yeah. But someday they're going to be in a job and they're going to have a meeting with their supervisor. And I doubt that they'll have the level of anxiety that their peers will, just because they had it with me when they were, you know, 14, 15 years old, and they know what it's like to have someone give you candid feedback, you know? So I think that it's important that, everything we do, we're thinking through that lens of, okay, am I helping prepare them for real life? And not in a way where we're, you know, this authoritarian dictator kind of leader, but in a way where we're there to help them grow. And I think we'll talk about that more in the conversation, but those were the thoughts that were jogged in my mind as you're talking about, you know, helping them become ready for real life.
Yeah. I think you're speaking to exactly what we're talking about. So yeah, I love that. Love it.
The next thing I want to talk about is, in your book, you talk about
whiteout conditions.
Yeah.
And how, yeah, sorry, butchered that question. You start off by talking about whiteout conditions and the some of the things that the next gen students face. Can you talk about this metaphor and why it's relevant for coaches?
Yeah. I wanted to start off actually the book with that because the metaphor of whiteout conditions, I think, speaks to the experience that we're having right now as leaders. It also speaks to the experience our student athletes are having. So whiteout conditions are a whole lot like, you know, I grew up in the South, so we don't have a lot of snowy whiteout conditions. The similar thing we might experience is you're driving early in the morning and a fog sets in, right? And you can't see, even if there was a car 30 feet in front of you, you can't see their taillights. It's the fog is so thick. The same thing happens way up north, only it's worse because along with that inability to see, you also mix really strong winds, snow or other precipitation is coming down, and the temperature is dropping, freezing temperatures. And I think that is a really adequate, if not perfect, spot on metaphor for how a lot of us are feeling leading today. We are in territory today that once felt familiar. So if you've been coaching for 20 years or even longer, there was a time when you knew exactly what you were doing. You had it going with your student athletes. Everything feels like it's going really well. And then something comes along, a sort of weather system comes in, and all of a sudden the conditions have changed right in front of you. And the territory that seemed familiar now feels foreign, right? So obviously the pandemic was a piece of that, student anxiety and other characteristics, some of the things that we've talked about. But all of those things have sort of swept in and change the game for us. It almost feels like the rug got pulled out from under us in some ways. And in like this real situation of whiteout conditions, there are actually stories of farmers in the very northern country, you know, like North Dakota and Montana and that kind of area that gets really heavy precipitation, or even up into Canada. There are stories of farmers who get lost in their own front yards, trying to make it out to their barn to take care of their animals during a blizzard, and they freeze to death in their own front yards. They're 50 feet from their front door and they have no idea where it is. And I think that picture is how a lot of coaches and teachers are dropping like flies right now. They're so overwhelmed with all the stuff on their plates that I think a lot of us feel like, I thought I understood it, but now I don't. And I'm lost in my own front yard. I'm freezing to death in my own front yard. And we're not the only ones who feel that way. I think our students do as well. The really cool picture of this for me is how farmers prepare for whiteout conditions is the same way I think great leaders prepare for challenging moments. And it's quite simple. If you're a farmer way up in North Dakota, right as fall is turning into winter, in order to prepare for the possibility of a big blizzard, you actually go out and you tie a rope. You tie that rope from your front door all the way to your barn door. And if there is a blizzard that sets in, you walk out your front door all wrapped up and you grab that rope and you hold on to it and you follow it all the way to your barn. You take care of your animals and then you walk out and you grab that rope and you follow it back to your house and you get back inside. And I think we can do the same thing. We prepare ahead of time and we build that rope, that sort of grounding element that gives us something to hold on to even as the weather is sort of swirling around us. And that's what soft skills do. When people talk about emotionally healthy people, they actually use the term emotionally grounded. Like you're quite literally have both feet kind of firmly planted on the ground. And I think the way that we get through the conditions we're facing now is for us as leaders and the students that we're leading today to actually develop those grounding soft skills. And that'll act like a rope during those whiteout conditions that we're facing.
Well, that's so good. Yeah, I like that. It's funny that you shared that as you were sharing that story, you're talking about those farmers. I literally thought in my mind, like, oh man, they should tie a rope, like a rope from their door to the barn or something like that to fall. Maybe I've seen that in a movie somewhere or something, but that's so funny. And you share, I was like, oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be a farmer.
You got the right instincts, man.
Yeah. I can't even imagine being in a whiteout like that and being so close to us. Oh, That's terrifying. Let's talk a little. We started to hit on it a little bit, but let's talk more about, and maybe you can even talk specifically about sports teams you've worked with or been around or witnessed. Why are the hard skills that we focus on so much? And no one is probably more guilty of this than coaches, because we're just all about the tactics and the technical aspects of our sport. But why are those hard skills not enough to lead us to the success that we're looking for?
It reminds me, this is a great question. It reminds me of an experience I had, a conversation I had years ago, even pre-pandemic. Colleen Munson is out at Western Michigan University. I don't know if you've met her or not, but she's a fantastic volleyball coach. And of course, they're D1 at Western Michigan, one of the best programs in the country in women's volleyball. And I sat down with Colleen Munson. I was actually introduced by a mutual friend of ours, Tree Beckman. And she and I sat down and she told me her story. She had come to Western Michigan. At the point I interviewed her, I think she'd been there about 8 years. And she is a brilliant recruiter and coach. And if you've been coaching very long, those are two important functions, right? So she had brought in incredibly talented people. They were recruiting at a higher level than they ever had. So they had these amazing players. And then she was coaching them very well. The X's and O's were all in the right place, right? And without fail, after about 2 years of getting the right players in, without fail, she was actually making it to the NCAA tournament every single year. But she was experiencing this challenge. And she said, we basically, our team hit a wall that we just couldn't get over for some reason. And she was racking her brain because for about 5 years in a row, they made it to the tournament. And a lot of times they were seeded pretty high. But without fail, in the first two rounds, basically, they were getting beat, oftentimes getting beat by teams that were ranked lower than them, less talented than them. And she realized that something is blocking us, that basically, when all the chips are down, we're facing our hardest battles yet. The pressure is on, do or die, high risk scenario, that basically the team was not coming together and getting the job done. It was almost like they forgot what they learned for the entire season in a moment of high pressure. And I think a lot of coaches feel that way. Like, I got the right guys on my team. I'm teaching them the right stuff. I'm at cutting edge. We've got the right equipment. The fans are there. Everything is there. But it just feels like when the pressure mounts, we're not ready for that moment. And the advice she got for a number of years, which she didn't listen to, she told me the story in full honesty. She said, I didn't listen to the advice, but the advice was, your problem is not the X's and O's. Your problem is that your team doesn't trust one another. They have not built the actual bonds that creates a team. And she didn't believe it because it didn't seem possible. Like, of course, it's the X's and O's. That's where we're failing, right? But the argument that was made to her was, no, the reason you're failing is because your team is not trusting each other in those really pivotal moments. And so she did something crazy after one particularly frustrating season. The very next season they came back, she decided, I'm going to take time because I'm limited on, obviously, by the NCAA rules on the amount of time I can actually spend with my athletes. So she took time out of practice, 30 minutes one day, an hour the next day, and actually put in time that had nothing to do with volleyball. Her team started doing scavenger hunts together. They started going out for ice cream. They started doing Friday night movie nights and other things that basically had nothing to do with volleyball, because the message she had received is, your team needs time to bond, to get to know one another, all that kind of stuff. What she found is that the more time she spent investing and helping her team communicate with one another, build trust with one another, camaraderie, and even start to build their ability to grow in their self-awareness of what am I doing that's making the team better or worse, as well as their ability to talk openly and honestly with one another. So give real honest feedback to one another. As some of those really their social and emotional skills started to be built, it actually made them better on the court. So they were spending less time in practice. They were seeing more success. And honestly, the very first year she started doing that, they made it all the way and finished fourth in the tournament. It was the farthest that they had been under her tenure. And from then on, she set out to create a new trajectory. And I think this is the piece of this that so many coaches and even frankly, leaders of all kinds who are leading the next generation fail to see is we think that if we just help them get straight A's, if we just help them learn the basics, you know, of how to move the ball down the court or how to run a play or whatever the hard skill is, we think that that one component is the secret to getting all of our success. That is a very important component. So please don't hear me say hard skills don't matter. What I am saying is I think we overestimate how much hard skills matter and we end up underdeveloping them in the area of soft skills. Some of the other intangibles that often seem not as important. And I think Colleen Munson and her journey at Western Michigan is just a really clear picture of that.
I love it. Thanks for sharing that story. And yeah, a lot of respect that, again, a coach at the highest level, that's a big risk. It's a risk for her because if it doesn't, quote unquote, work out, then everyone's gonna be saying, "Oh, this is the reason it doesn't work out." Because
yeah, you went out for ice cream.
Less time on court. Yeah. No wonder you guys aren't any good. Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's a big risk, and I respect that she was willing to take it because she recognized there's something missing. We should be at this level, but we're not there. And so, what is it that's missing? And it's that trust. It's that connection. It's those social emotional skills that she was intentional about building. And like you talked about with the clear picture of Gen Z, you know, so many times coaches, leaders, adults, you know, we'll talk about that these young people, they don't know how to communicate and connect with each other, and then we're not doing anything to help them.
Yeah.
And they don't know, many of them really don't know how to build trust.
I agree.
They don't know how to build trust with each other. And this is, I think you'll like this story, Andrew, because you work with so many coaches and teachers, but this last week of this past school year, it's a slower week. We have finals. We're not doing much in class, right? It's winding down the school year, and so there's some downtime. And I'm talking with one of my students, and this student was without a doubt my most difficult student all year. There's not a lot of students that can get me to a point where I lose my cool or my patience, but there were a couple times where I did with this student. And in one meeting with my assistant principal, he said, "Hey, I'll just give you some props. You've had it with this student. And we have 2 months left in school, but every other one of his teachers had it with him after 2 weeks." So like he was that kind of student. But at the same time, like I knew that he kind of liked me. I really do like this kid. Like we had a decent relationship, right? We made it to this point in the school year before I kind of just had it with him. But school year's wrapping up. It's relaxed in class. We're talking. I'm asking about what he's going to do this summer. And he's telling me that he's going to go, his uncle's a plumber. He's going to be working with him. I said, "Oh, great. You're going to be making some money." He's like, "Yeah, $400 a week." I'm like, "Man, that's awesome. I'm happy for you. It sounds like that's going to be great. So are you good at it? Have you done it before?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm pretty good at it." And somehow it connected that conversation. Another student said something and trust came up. And we started talking about trust. And I said to this student, I said, "Well, I'll call him Carter." I said, Carter, no, I don't really trust you. You haven't earned my trust this year, but, this other student, we'll call him Jack, said, I trust Jack more than you. I just told him, I said, Jack has consistently proved with his behavior that I can trust him. And then I said to him, I said, "CEO, let's pretend that, Jack and you both become plumbers down the road and you're both plumbers here in Northwest Arkansas and my toilet breaks and I look for a plumber in Northwest Arkansas and I see that Jack is a plumber. And I see that you are a plumber." I said, "Who do you think I'm going to call?" And he said, "Jack." I said, "Why?" He's like, "Because you trust him." I said, "Yeah, why do you think I trust him?" He's like, "Well, because of how he acted this year." I said, "Yeah." I said, "You might end up becoming an even better plumber, but your actions didn't earn trust. I didn't trust you as much. But, right, if you made a change and you started to earn significant trust, well, I probably would call you." And I said, "Now, like, who's going to end up making more money too in the future too? Because now I'm like trying to connect, like, this is real life stuff." I said, "Sam's probably going to make more money because he's more trustworthy than you." Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know if it was a light bulb moment for him or not, but it was just a very honest conversation I had with this young person about trust. And I just said, this is how the world operates. They operate on trust. And someday when I need a plumber, I'm going to call someone I trust. Right. And so the behaviors that you're exhibiting right now, they impact who trusts you. And and potentially they might even impact your business, your future, your success someday. And I think it was, yeah, I think it was an opportunity to hopefully help him realize some things that'll help him get ready for real life. And I think as coaches, we even have an easier avenue to have those conversations because, you know, that kid did not want to be in my English class. He hated English, but those athletes, they want to be in our practice on our team.
Yes.
And so it's even easier to get their attention and have these conversations. But I think it's so, so, so important that we help these young people just understand trust. And then how do we build it? Right. Cause we talked about like, okay, how do you earn trust? Right. Yeah. And I think we even talked a little bit about, okay, when you are a plumber, how are you going to earn trust? Does your uncle trust you? He's like, yeah, my uncle trusts me. He's paying me $400 a week. Well, why does he trust you? Because I show up and I do the work. I said, do you work hard when you're with him? Yeah. I said, well, yeah, no wonder he trusts you. I said, what would happen if you didn't show up? Well, he would fire me. I said, yeah, I would. Right. Cause it's not trustworthy. And so I think it was just this opportunity to have this dialogue around trust when again, yeah, it's something that this generation desperately needs. They need that trust and connection and they need to learn how it operates in our world. We need to help them become ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great story. And I think it's a perfect picture because you're exactly right. That's why I love working with coaches so much is you guys carry so much influence over the young people in your sphere. Almost every other adult relationship they have that relationship because they have to, right? That's my mom. I have to follow her. That's my teacher. I have to do what he or she says. But when it's coaching, it's a choice very often that they're making to be in that space and to follow you because you represent or you give them access to a goal that they desire. But you're exactly right. When you use the term coaching, I love you used it broadly there, right? I'm coaching them on sport and on life, right? I'm helping them realize this valuable skill that they're building as they're working alongside their teammates or connecting with other people in the classroom. That's the same skill that's going to impact them later on in life. And in fact, it already is impacting them if they would only realize it. So I love that story. You made such a key connection for him to understand the way the world works. And that's really what we're talking about. So,
yeah. Well, let's dive into these five core soft skills that all student athletes need. You know, this is the big focus of your book. Why don't you go through those five and then we can dive a little bit deeper into some of them.
Yeah. So I used a metaphor for each of these big five, and this comes from a whole bunch of research that you don't need to read. It's kind of boring, but what the research shows is that when these soft skills are present, that there is more success in life. And they use that term pretty broadly, but success in life is better grades, higher paying jobs, longer, happier relationships, all that kind of stuff. So five metaphors, here we go. The first one is the mirror. And the mirror is the skill of self-awareness. Much like when we look in a mirror in the bathroom, it can tell us the honest truth about, hey, there's something in our teeth, or we put our shirt on backwards. In the same way, a mirror tells us the truth about who we are on the inside. And it would be really great if we could all walk around with mirror people, meaning just like you were for Carter. It would be awesome if Carter walked around and everybody around him always said, hey, you're being a jerk today, or hey, that thing you said was really dumb or whatever. But we just can't trust that that's going to be happening, which is why the best, the people with the most self-awareness are the ones who are their own mirror. They're able to go, man, why did I react that way to that person just then? Or I feel really angry. Why am I so angry? Where did that anger come from? That's what self-awareness is. It's recognizing or responding to the way you're reacting to the world around you and beginning to ask questions about where that comes from and beginning to develop your own kind of emotion regulation. So my ability to manage my own internal stuff, the emotions and feelings and other things that I've got going on inside of me. Wouldn't it all be great if all the student athletes we led had really strong mirrors and they could see clearly? The second one is the map. The map is the skill of self-management. If you were getting a student ready for a journey into the wilderness, right? Say you've been to that spot in the Colorado wilderness or wherever they're going before, that you might get the impression that the best way to get them ready for that journey is to get out a map and draw the path for them. That's indeed what a lot of us as coaches and leaders do, is we draw out the map, right? We go, here's what we're doing all day in practice today. I've got every little detail planned. But the reality is, if we really wanted to get them ready for the journey, we'd have to recognize that us planning out the whole journey is not actually going to get them ready. Because if they get out there in the wilderness and they go a little bit slower than we had planned and they can't quite make it to the campsite and they've got to figure out themselves, how do I spot a campsite? How do I pick a good spot? How do I set up my tent? All that kind of stuff. Or what if something tragic happens out there and they suddenly can't follow the path that you laid out for them? They got to find their own path. Which is why I think the best way to get students ready for a journey into the wilderness is the same way we get them ready for life. And that is hand them the map. Hand them the map and ask them, where do you want to go? And then you serve as the guide, giving them advice as they're drawing out their own path. And I actually think this applies big picture to life, but also small picture to all the leadership things that we do for them every single day. What if you could hand them the map for practice this week? What if you could hand them the map for how they pick the, captains for the team or whatever it is, but beginning to start to give them some ownership and some leadership is actually the best way to help them get ready for their life. So when we talk about self-management, that's personal discipline, that's goal setting, that's regulating or controlling my impulses. All those things come when we hand them the map, and then we serve as guides rather than gods, right? We're not making all the decisions for them. We're sort of, we're the Yoda to their Luke Skywalker. We're walking alongside them, giving them advice, poking and prodding when necessary, but ultimately letting them realize it's their journey. The compass is the third one. It's the skill of responsible decision-making. If that student was on that journey in the wilderness and all you had given them for their journey was a GPS, it wouldn't actually be that helpful, right? GPSs are only helpful when you're on paved roads. But most of the students we're leading today have only ever gotten GPS style leadership. Turn here, do this, don't do that. Stop hitting him, follow this direction, do this practice thing. Whatever it is, we've been giving turn by turn instructions. That's not actually that helpful when they get out into their own kind of wilderness of life. They would fare much better in those scenarios if we gave them a compass rather than a GPS. And a compass obviously always points towards north, no matter where I find myself. And I really think of a compass as your own personal values. We've got to help our students begin to develop their own true north, their own personal set of values that are going to give them direction no matter where they are. And a really great way to do that is to have your own team values. Who are we no matter what scenario we find ourselves in? And that'll give us direction even if we find ourselves in unknown territory. No doubt throughout the season, throughout the semester, you are going to face things you were not ready for or you were not prepared for. But if you have values that drive your decision-making, you're going to make much better choices later on when you're approaching those obstacles. That's what the compass is all about, making responsible choices. So this is about evaluating problems and solving problems. And this is also about critical thinking. It's also about ethics and morals, how I make choices. And all of that comes back to the values that drive my decision-making. The fourth skill is the skill of it's the two-way radio. It's a colloquially called a walkie-talkie, right? And that's the skill of relationship management. It's of connecting with people. So connecting with people works a lot like a two-way radio, right? It's got two factors at play. First, you've got channels on that thing, and you've got to learn to get on the same wavelength or the same channel with another person. If I'm saying something really great to you, but I'm on channel one and you're on channel three, it won't really matter, right? I'm not actually getting through to you. And we've all been in conversations with people, and you say something to them, and when they respond back, it's like, did you hear anything I just said? You are on a completely different wavelength from me. So we've got to learn how to empathize with other people, get on their same channel, and connect with them on a human-to-human level. And the other skill is listening skills. If you've ever talked on a two-way radio, you know you cannot talk and listen at the same time, right? There is a listener and there is a talker. And when one person is done, they use language to communicate, I'm ready to listen. They say over, right? And that means I'm done talking. I'm now ready to listen. So how good are we with our listening skills? So building those skills of the two-way radio is the same as building great relational skills. And that is, do I know how to get on the same wavelength with other people? And do I have great listening skills so that I'm able to truly hear what people are saying to me. The final skill is the passport. The passport is the skill of social awareness. It's really about our identity, who we are in relation to the world around us. And everybody, just like a passport, has two elements to their identity. The part in the front, that ID with your photo and information about you, that is your inherited identity. That's the part of you you didn't get to choose. In fact, nothing on that front page was made by choice. What you look like, your name, your birth date, your country of origin, all of that was chosen for you. And all of us in the same way carry with us an inherited identity. We have a family of origin and a history that we didn't choose, but it's who we are. But we do have a choice in the second part of our identity. The stamps we get in our passport are the experiences we get along the way. And those are our choices. I think of those as our adopted identity. That's who we decide to be by the choices we decide to make. So one student chooses to join the basketball team. Another chooses to join the debate team, right? That was a choice they made. And those two experiences, those choices they make, shape the way they think about themselves and ultimately shape the way they interact with the world around them. So their social awareness is built of who they were, like who, where they come from, but also the choices that they made along the way. And that helps them interact or better interact with the people around them. So social awareness comes down to our ability to understand the world around us. It's teamwork, and it's applying ourselves to the relationships around us based on who we are. So those are the five skills kind of at a glance. I thought of them as almost like tools you'd want to put in the backpack of your student as they were headed off into the wilderness of adulthood, right? You would want them to walk away and say, okay, I'm not sure exactly what I'm about to face, but I've got my mirror, I've got my map, I've got my compass, I've got my two-way radio, I've got my passport, I'm ready to go.
It's so good. And, you know, just imagine, coaches, if we took 30, 45, 60 minutes and we sat down and we came up with a plan, something, just one thing practical in each of those five areas in this next season that you were going to work on, right? Here's an intentional way that I'm going to address each one of these five areas this next season. And not that that's going to mean that you're done, but just to start, right? Okay, what's one way that we can start to help our athletes grow in self-awareness, right? That emotional regulation. What's one way we can help them increase their self-management? Like, where can we let them set goals or give input into practice? How can we, this responsible decision-making, okay? It's a conversation about core values, or how are we going to handle situations when they don't make responsible decision-making? Let them have some input into that. The relationship management, okay, you know, we're doing X, Y, Z this season to make sure that we're teaching them how to listen and how to get on the same channels with people. And then that other part is we're having conversations about their identity, who they are, right? The things they didn't choose, but then the things that they do choose. And I think that, yeah, for us as coaches, man, those are five categories that I think, man, I would love to help my athletes grow in these five ways. You just got to start small, start somewhere.
Absolutely.
In those five areas, because like we've talked about, those are the things that are going to help them be ready for real life. Well, Andrew, before we wrap it up and hop off, I would actually love it if you shared with the listeners your favorite habitude for sports teams. And if the listeners aren't familiar with habitudes, a leadership curriculum that you guys developed, I've been exposed to it in the school context, really high quality curriculum and content. Uses pictures and images to communicate these leadership concepts to this next generation. And as I was thinking about this interview, I was just really curious, hey, what is Andrew's favorite habitude for sports team? And I'm sure it may connect to some of the things we've talked about today.
Yeah. So habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. So we use a picture, story, and a metaphor to teach a really important life principle. It's a great way to actually teach these soft skills that I've been talking about. So my favorite one whenever I'm in front of athletes is it's called the oversized gift. So the image, if you can imagine it, is a kid who's carrying a wrapped present so big, all you can see are the kid's legs, right? And kind of maybe the tips of his fingers as they're trying to wrap around this gigantic gift. So it's an oversized gift. It'd be like going to a kid's birthday party. So going to your four-year-old child's birthday party, and everybody's there for the party, and they're unwrapping their gifts, and they're getting a lot of really cool stuff. And then you guys as the parents go, okay, we've got one last gift for you, and let's all go in the garage. And the garage door opens up, and inside is a Harley Davidson motorcycle. Now everybody would go, wow. That's a really cool gift, but that doesn't fit the four-year-old at all, right? It's the gift is bigger than they are. They're not ready for the gift that they're getting. And I find that the same thing happens a lot in life, especially in sport, is we run into young, talented kids who have a gift, a talent. They're faster than everybody else. They're more charismatic than everybody else. They have a natural leadership tendency and everybody just follows them, whatever they want to do. But often that gift is bigger than they are. And what I love to remind really talented young athletes is you have the ability to make one poor character choice that can ruin your talent. There are so many athletes we can point to who had an off-the-court decision that caused them to ruin all of their on-the-court talent. And in the same way, it's really easy for talented people to ride it out on their talent until their talent can't support them anymore, and then a bad character choice can ground it all. And the challenge I leave with them is never let your talent be bigger than your character. You need a high amount of character to support a high amount of talent, because the more talented you are, the more opportunity and temptation is going to come your way. The more opportunity for poor choices is going to come your way. You've got to support talent with character so you don't fall victim to the oversized gift.
That's so good. And a good leadership reminder for us as coaches, right? You have that success. Don't let that your coaching talent become bigger than your character. That's such a good reminder. Well, Andrew, I have three quick rapid fire questions for you. I would consider you a coach. You're coaching leaders, you're coaching coaches. So you can just answer based on the coaching experience that you have. I don't know, maybe you also coach some sports teams or have had coaching experience in the sports space. I'm not sure on that. So you share from your experience. Okay. The first question is this: the most fun part of coaching is...
The most fun part of coaching is just that. I think it's fun. I think when we let coaching be too serious and we lose the joy and the fun and the laughter, to me, we lose the most important part. There are far too many spaces, I think, where students, particularly student athletes, get a chance to enjoy one another. And I think sport, first and foremost, it's a game, right? It's about fun. And so when I see the joy on a student's face as we're experiencing that, that to me is where the best part is.
That's awesome. The second one, I wish I would have known blank before my first coaching experience.
Yeah, we got a saying at Growing Leaders, and this would be what I'd say I really wish I knew is, if you want to have hard, challenging conversations where you help that student get over that hump, you have to realize this truth. And that is, you've got to build bridges of relationship that can support the weight of difficult conversations. Bridges of relationship that can support the weight of difficult conversations. In other words, the way you get ready for a hard conversation is you build a relationship with them in anticipation of knowing eventually you're going to make a boneheaded decision and I'm going to have to challenge you on it. So I'm going to get to know you now so we're ready for that moment later. I did not do that, especially with the first couple of, especially like hires I made and interns I had and all those different students that I worked with. I didn't realize that you make early investments so that can pay off later in hard conversations. I think that's an essential to functioning well as a coach.
That's such a good nugget. The last one, I know I'm successful as a coach when...
I think you know where you're successful when your players don't just follow you as a coach, but they love you as a leader. To me, I think... love becomes an essential outcome of creating really strong bonds between coaches and athletes, or really any adult trying to develop a young person. I think love forms an essential component. And love, like I said, is an after effect of tight bonds, honest communication, and really great relationships. So I think that's a huge part of it.
Andrew, this has been an awesome conversation. Before we wrap it up and hop off, just share with the listeners where they can connect with you, get your book, or learn more about the work that you guys do.
Yeah, so you can find out more about my book at readyforreallifebook.com. And then I write at growingleaders.com. And I also write at my own website, andrewmcpeak.com. That's M-C-P-E-A-K. So yeah, if you want to follow what I'm doing, I'm always working on something, and I would love to have some more connections.
Coaches, thanks for listening to this episode, and a huge thanks to Andrew for joining me. You can find links to connect with Andrew or to get his book in the show details. And don't forget to check out the show details if you'd like to get the free podcast notes, or you want to learn more about how we serve coaches through our free resources or one-on-one mentorship. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll see you next time.